Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is a different episode, different type of episode, and it's also not the episode that was planned for this week at all, not even close to what was planned for this week. None of this was on my bingo card. So before I get going with the rest of the intro, to let you guys know what's going on, if you didn't catch it live, I am live, recording this live on YouTube, so we got a bunch of people in the live chat, so I'll be referring to some of the questions and maybe some things they want to add from the chat. But it's just the last 72 hours have been pretty crazy. And, you know, I had actually written a whole script that I had to throw out because of something else that happened this week, which I'm going to talk about here in just a second. And then we had all the stuff going on with Adnan's case. So like the last 72 hours have been bananas. So I went through and did a bunch of research, took a bunch of notes and decided, fuck it, we'll do it live. We're going to go live and I'll just record it this way. So some of the people are getting to hear it as I'm recording it on Thursday afternoon. The rest of you will be listening to this on Sunday morning. But thanks to all of you that are participating. And with that, let's go ahead and I'll get this thing started. First and foremost, the plan for this week. I still can't reveal all details, but what I was going to do this week, it was going to be an episode on the West Memphis 3 case. And that was because it was supposed to happen this Tuesday, the 25th. We were supposed to get the order signed for the DNA testing in the West Memphis 3 case on this Tuesday. And late Monday night, and I mentioned this, and for those of you that are listening, you know, in real time or on Sunday, you'll have heard this in the follow-up on Friday. But late Monday night, one of the attorneys involved got sick and they had to postpone it. This is the second time it's been postponed. This hearing, or not even a hearing, the judge was supposed to sign the order and we were supposed to move forward with next steps back in January. We should already have the DNA results at this point. But that one got postponed due to some scheduling conflicts with attorneys. This one that we were just right on the cusp of ready to go to sign the order to officially have DNA testing going forward. And as I mentioned, there is a lot more to that, a lot more than anybody knows. And that's what kind of this week's episode is going to be about, is kind of revealing all that stuff that we don't want to get into any of that until after the order's signed and everything is official. So kind of had to throw that script out, baby, out with the bathwater. Then I thought another thing I want to do related to the West Memphis 3 that I was thinking of doing in its place, that's also going to kind of relate to our next case. And that just didn't seem to play out. And then while we were live doing the follow-up on Tuesday, we got word that Ivan Bates, the state's attorney in Baltimore, has withdrawn Marilyn Mosby's motion to vacate Adnan Syed's conviction. Now, we were already going to have news on Adnan's case on Wednesday, because Wednesday there was already scheduled to be a hearing, a JRA hearing, which is a juvenile resentencing hearing, where aside from what was going on with Adnan's exoneration, they were also, this process was going forward to resentence Adnan since he was convicted. You know, the crime happened when he was a juvenile. He was sentenced to life in prison. And so they were looking at, you know, based on some new law that's out there it's not super new now. You know, when juveniles are sentenced to life sentences, they can have their sentences reviewed and changed. Leading up to this, Ivan Bates had already said that he doesn't think Adnan should go back to prison, that he thinks that the sentence should be, regardless of what happens next, the sentence should be reduced to time served, 23 and a half years, which then would mean whatever happens next, either way, Adnan's out of prison. A lot of people saw that as a good sign, you know, that Ivan Bates came out and made that declaration prior to this hearing happening, that he is in support of Adnan and he's in support of him staying out of prison. Personally, that statement scared the shit out of me at the time. I was very concerned about when I saw it because I didn't see if he was intending to continue on with vacating the conviction. Why are we even talking about the sentencing? You know, what doesn't matter what the sentencing is if we're going to overturn the conviction. So that was a big red flag for me immediately that he said anything about that. And it turns out that's what happened. A little background, and I'm sure most of you already know this, but for those of you that don't, and also just to kind of clarify what's been happening up to this point. So a couple years ago, Marilyn Mosby and her team looked at the case and determined there was, first of all, the first thing she did was vacate the conviction. It was all done very quickly. The attorney working under her, she filed a motion based on the cell phone evidence. The big one was a big Brady violation, that there was notes in the prosecutor's file that the defense did not have, that were never turned over to the defense, that implicated an alternate suspect. There was two of them that were written notes that Urich had written that indicated that the police, or he at the time, way back then, had gotten information from someone that someone had threatened Hay's life, that said that they'll make her disappear. We know now for sure, as of now, that it was Bilal, that Marilyn Mosby said that was about. And there was also information about Alonzo Sellers. So they used that to overturn the conviction. They pushed it through really quickly, and so quickly that Heyman Lee's brother Young was not able to get to the hearing in person. And when they had the hearing, an attorney showed up representing Young and said that he doesn't think the hearing should go forward until Young can be there in person. The judge then said, well, we'll wait till Young gets off work. We'll let him zoom in. He zooms in, makes a statement. The judge rules conviction overturned. A little while later, we got some DNA results. There was four DNA profiles found on Hay's shoes that were in her back seat. And none of it was identified who it was, but we know none of it was Adnan. And Marilyn Mosby used that to say that she's filing a null prosecute, which means they've dropped the charges and essentially made a promise that they're never going to prosecute Adnan for this again. Like, the conviction's overturned and he's done. So that's where we've been sitting ever since. The state appealed that up to the next court, who upheld the ruling. It went up to the Maryland Supreme Court. And the appeal was based on the fact that, not on the merits, and that's important to understand with this, it was not based on the fact that the arguments were not valid. It was based on the fact that Young Lee did not have ample notice to be there, the victim's brother. In a 4-3 ruling at the Maryland Supreme Court, they ruled that to not overturn, but remand the case back down to the lower court. They agreed, the judges agreed that Young Lee should have been given more notice. He needs to have that notice. And so they sent it back, basically undid what was done and remanded it back down to the court where it originally started, to basically go through the hearing all over again. It gets complicated in the fact that during that time span, Marilyn Mosby lost an election, Ivan Bates took over, so now we have a new guard. So the motion still stood in place, that there's still this motion from the prosecutor's office to vacate Adnan's conviction, which isn't normal. It doesn't happen very often. You see, it happens with conviction integrity units. Oftentimes, if you have a prosecutor that agrees that a conviction needs to be overturned, they will join in a motion with the defense, where the defense files a motion and the prosecutor joins it, basically saying, we're not opposing this. But in this case, the motion was filed by the state. So it remanded back, and we've all been waiting to see what Ivan Bates is going to do with it. Are we just going to redo the hearing, give Young Lee his notice, which is what we were all expecting, which is what we were hoping, that we would go back to court. They would just do a redo. It's a different judge now. But, you know, hopes were high that we would get the same result just on this redo. But what has happened is Ivan Bates reviewed the motion to vacate, now that he's in office, reviewed the evidence that was used to justify the motion to vacate. And he came out on Tuesday and said he's withdrawing that motion. So you have two different people. You have Mosby that made the motion and Ivan Bates that withdrew it. But I understand if you take a step back, it's just that office. What it looks like is the state's attorney's office filed the motion, reconsidered, and said, now we're taking it off the table. We're not filing that. We're not supporting that motion anymore. We're dropping the motion to vacate the conviction. So that's just over. It's done. There is no current motion in place anymore that says that they're trying to vacate Adnan's conviction, which came as a shock to everybody, myself included, even though, as I said, I was not feeling great about the fact that he was talking about the juvenile resentencing. I did watch, and if you haven't seen it yet, if you go onto Rabia's Instagram today, which was Thursday, she did a live with Colin Miller where they talked about this stuff. And they also talked about the juvenile resentencing hearing that happened on Wednesday this week. They're the best source of information for that. I wasn't there. I watched it to get the information from them so I could just kind of reiterate it back to you. That process seemed to go very well from Ivan Bates' side. And the defense side, it sounds like there's some concerns about the judge. So essentially, you know, the defense came up. There's 11 points that they have to hit. I'm not going to reiterate all those. You can watch Rabia's live to get all that. But they went through point by point. Here's all the reasons why Adnan should have his sentence changed, basically be resentenced to time served so that even though he's still a convicted murderer, he would be free and be guaranteed to be free for the rest of his life, and barring he doesn't commit another crime or a crime, because I don't believe he committed this crime. So the defense did their thing, and then Ivan Bates, true to his word from what he had said a couple weeks ago, made the arguments for Adnan to be resentenced, you know, and the arguments were pretty simple. Other than the legal, you know, the 11 legal points, it's, you know, it had nothing to do with whether or not he committed the crime. It was, you know, he was a juvenile when he did this, or dealing with impulse control issues with anybody that age, which is why the law exists. He's been an exemplary prisoner. He's never had any issues in prison. He's had two write-ups in his entire 23 and a half years in prison, and those were for a cell phone. He's never been in fights, gangs, none of that stuff. And then the big one is, too, and it's also, he has family connections and religious, his faith and everything that he has going forward. He has a life outside of it. And Adnan's case has become very unique because he's out. He's been out for 2 years, which is advantageous, too, because the whole thing with this is what the judge really should be trying to assess is this person still a threat to society? You know, working under, this works under the premise, so I'm not saying I believe Adnan's guilty, but it's working under the premise that he is guilty, that he committed this crime, he's been rehabilitated. And in this case, we're able to, and Ivan Bates did, as well as the defense, point to he's been out for 2 years. He's married. He has a job. He's been very successful. He's had no issues. So we've already gotten a 2-year look at what it looks like for Adnan Syed to be out in the free world. All of that went really well. But from what I understand from Robbie and Colin and other people that have reported on what went on there in that hearing, the judge, it concerns me. The judge did not seem to be buying it, really. You know, she, you know, when Ivan Bates mentioned that there were, you know, with juveniles, we're talking about impulse control issues, she interrupted him, according to what Rabia said, and to point out that this was premeditated murder. It wasn't an impulse type of decision. She really stressed the fact over and over that Adnan is a convicted murderer, that this was a heinous act on Haman Lee, and that Adnan is not a victim, that Haman Lee and her family are the victims here, and she needs to consider that. I'm hoping she rules with some, you know, whether you believe Adnan's innocent or guilty, I don't know, but I don't see how anyone could really think Adnan is a violent threat to society at this point. So the big hope is with that the judge does go ahead and rule in favor to the resentencing. And then this is over for as far as Adnan being at risk of going back to prison or not. He'll still have to deal with the conviction. Who knows if he'll even continue to fight it from there. He did one thing that he did say that Rabia talked about in her live is, if you notice, since Adnan's been out, he hasn't done any media. You haven't seen him on any interviews. You haven't seen him on Undisclosed. You haven't seen him on my show. You haven't seen him anywhere doing media. He's not writing a book. He's not doing any of that. All things that Rabia kind of encouraged him to do when he got out. And he said in the hearing that when he got out and he saw interviews with Hayes' family and read about how Hayes' family feels like they're being traumatized by Adnan being out, that it's just reopening this wound and it's hard on them that he's out of prison, he made the decision for their sake that he's not going to do any media, that he's not doing social media, he's not doing media, He's just out and he's living his life, but essentially he doesn't want to throw that in the face of the victims' families because he knows that's hard on them. All things that I think really should lead to this sentence being, you know, resentenced so that he just gets to be done and over with. Like I said, I'm concerned. The judge did say that she would rule faster than normal. It usually takes about 3 months, so hopefully faster than that we'll have a ruling. Robbie and Colin Pohl said that they think that most likely she already knows what her ruling is going to be. She's probably already decided. She just has to write up the order because it has to be a written order. So as far as that's concerned, I think that's where we really need to be putting all of our hopes and prayers right now, that she rules to resentence him and then that part of it's over. And we can kind of breathe and know that Adnan is going to be out and he's not going back to prison. Truth and Justice is sponsored by First Form. Losing weight and getting in shape doesn't have to be miserable. Now, in order to be successful, you do have to be conscious about what you eat, but that doesn't mean you have to live a life full of nasty, bland food and kale. I hate kale, by the way, but that's beside the point. The point is that if you're going to lose weight and keep it off, then you need to find a system and a meal plan that's sustainable. And that's First Form. The app makes it super easy to set your macros and calories, and it sets you up with goals that are achievable and sustainable. But beyond that, First Form knows that you're not going to keep it up long term eating nothing but egg whites and freaking kale. Did I mention that I hate kale? Because First Form knows that if you like what you're eating, you're going to keep eating it. So they set out to create some of the best supplements in the world that actually taste great. Have you ever actually craved a protein bar? Probably not, unless you were on some kind of starvation diet and you were dying to eat anything with some flavor. But check this out. I've said it 100 times that First Form's chocolate peanut butter pretzel protein bar is probably the best candy bar I've ever tasted, and it is. But there's another flavor in the running for me now. Peanut butter and jelly flavored. And holy crap, is it good. It tastes exactly like how you're imagining it. So damn good. First Form has found a way to shift your cravings over to great supplements and away from unhealthy sugary foods and kale. I hate kale. With First Form, you can eat delicious food that you actually crave and still lose weight. Another crowd favorite is the red velvet flavored protein powder for shakes. And that's just naming a couple. Everything First Form has is delicious. And you can get started on your fitness journey today and fill your cupboards with your own delicious snacks at firstform.com/truth, where you'll get free shipping on any order over $75. And if you're a new customer, they'll email you a link to try the app for free. And they have a 110% money-back guarantee on their products. So if I'm lying, you can send it right back. But I promise you that's not going to happen. It's all so good. First Form can change your life like it did mine. So one more time, go to the number one, STPHORM.com/truth.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now, what I want to spend the majority of our time today talking about is Ivan Bates' withdrawal of the motion to vacate, because that's the big, it doesn't equal that this is over. The defense can still file a motion to vacate with their evidence. It's just we don't have the state doing it for us now at this point. And truthfully, I think it'll probably be pretty tough for this to come through from the defense side with the state arguing against it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through, I read through the order that, or the motion that I read through the executive summary, which you can find online easily, which is, you know, lays out everything that Ivan Bates argued. So I'm just going to go through the bullet points of that and the reasons why he said he dropped the motion. Now, I'm going to be coming at this from trying to be a neutral perspective, because here's the thing. I don't like this any more than anybody else does. And I don't know what the motivation is. There's a lot of speculation that it's because of politics, and it probably is, but I don't know if everybody's really getting it right as far as why, how this affects the politics. Because for most of you that have followed this case know that Ivan Bates has been very public in the past and saying that he thinks Adnan's innocent, and he supports the conviction being thrown out. So as I discuss these things, I'm gonna approach them from the perspective that Ivan Bates does believe Adnan's innocent, but he's trying to follow the letter of the law and do things right. And I'm not saying that I know that to be the case. I just don't want to sit here and argue against this. I want to lay out the way he explained it. Because the reason I say that is because if the way Ivan Bates laid this out, and if the things he put in this are accurate, then as much as I hate to say it, I can see where he's coming from. I can see why he feels like, and I guess the perspective that I think that someone who was, you know, not biased, not doing anything wrong, but they're just trying to do their job the best way possible, I could see where someone could look at this and say, if a defense attorney filed this motion, it would lose. That's kind of the way I looked at it, is what he's saying here, that this is not enough to overturn a conviction. The big thing that I want to point out, because, you know, there are other people, other content creators, people on social media that are going to say that because of this, this is Ivan Bates saying that he thinks that Adnan is guilty. And I want to make clear that is not at all what he's saying. He is not saying in this motion that he thinks Adnan is guilty. What he's saying is that he doesn't think that the evidence that was used in order to vacate the conviction was strong enough evidence to do so. That's what it says, and right or wrong. And it's, Robbie had said something about how after the hearing, Lester Holt was interviewing Ivan Bates, and he asked him, if you had this case to try all over again right now, would you try it again? And he said, absolutely. And Robbie was kind of shocked by that. When I heard that, I was too. I'm like, how could he say that? How could you, like, this case is ridiculous. Especially, like, meaning, like, trying it now means you're trying it with everything you know about Jay Wilds, everything he's lying about, a better understanding of the science. You have the DNA. There's so much more out there. All the stuff we know about Don is as a potential alternate suspect and his alibi problems. All these things are in there too. So it was kind of shocking to hear it. Robbie was shocked. But then I've taken this last hour and kind of digested a little bit and realized that obviously he said that. I think that he has to say that, if that makes sense. Because, you know, from his position, if he were to stand up and say, no, I wouldn't try it again, well, then you're admitting to the public and to any defense attorney that's going to grab onto that later that you don't have a strong case here, which means you don't think that there's integrity in the conviction. So if he's not himself trying to vacate the conviction, if his position is to uphold the conviction, then there's no way he's going to say anything other than, yes, I absolutely would try this case again. But I did also love how Robbie put it, and she said, let's do it. That's what we've been asking for. Try it again. Let us have a new trial. Only reason I mention that is because I just wouldn't read too much into that. I don't think I would, from what I read from what he put out here in this executive summary and the statements he's made, there's nothing that I've seen that leads me to indicate or leads me to believe that Ivan Bates thinks Adnan is guilty. And I agree with Colin. I think a lot of this is he's just kind of going after Marilyn Mosby. She had all kinds of problems. And I think that, you know, that's definitely probably, not definitely, that could be or probably is some of what's driving this. But with that being said, that I'm going to go through what he put into that executive summary, kind of the way, this is my notes on it, how I thought it, kind of in my non-lawyer layman terms, what I'm reading there. So once he's in office and the Supreme Court of Maryland remands this back to him, from way he writes it, his job then is to, before he just automatically swings it right back into the court and fights for this conviction to be overturned, He needs to review it and make sure that it's legitimate. So he's tasked with reviewing the previous filing to see if it had any merit. He points right out in the first couple pages of the summary that Marilyn Mosby refused to communicate with his office, which is problematic. You know, I think a lot of the things you're going to hear up front, I think, probably fed into this. So sounds like they tried to talk to Marilyn Mosby to ask about some of these things, and she refused to talk to them. She had established what they call in the document at SRT, or the Syed review team, the Adnan Syed review team. And he said that the Syed review team also failed to preserve many of the records. It doesn't get into in the summary what those records are, but essentially there's documents that he needs that aren't there. He says that only one member of that team communicated with his office at all when they tried to talk to them about the investigation, and they only gave very limited information to him, and that was through an attorney. They wouldn't speak to him directly. Throughout his process, he interviewed the defense team, the police, the state's attorneys, both current and previous. And he says in his opening that he, through that process, determined that he cannot endorse the previous motion to vacate. So right up front, I think one of the problems is, I think if there was going to be a way to preserve this, Marilyn Mosby needed to step up and have that conversation. I don't know what's going on with that, why she refused to talk to them, but where you had, so you have the two sides here, right? You've got Kevin Urich, you've got the police department, AG's office, all of them fighting to keep advocating to keep the conviction in place. And then Marilyn Mosby was in the position to advocate to continue to press forward to get it overturned, and she didn't do that. So that just needs to be said. That's part of the problem here, at least the way, and again, everything that I'm saying is what he wrote. So if this turns out to be not true, that's a different story. But based on what he wrote, there was nobody on the Adnan is innocent side advocating for this motion to stay in place. They wouldn't talk to them. So then he goes through, there was three elements to vacating the conviction, two to vacate the conviction and one for the null prosecute. So we'll kind of go, and he broke down why he didn't think they have merit. So the first were the Brady violations. So, and we're talking about those handwritten notes about the alternate suspects. And he says, you know, in order for, and you guys know this, they've been listening for a long time to me and everybody else that covers this type of stuff. In order for it to be Brady and to be used to overturn a conviction, Bates looked at it and said that I need to prove, one, I have to prove that this was not turned over to the defense, and also that it would have changed the outcome of the trial. So then he goes through what the Brady violations were. So there was these two handwritten notes. Mosby claimed they identified alternate suspects and that they were withheld from the defense. In his review, he found that she never once interviewed Kevin Urich, who's the one who authored the notes, to find out what they meant or to ask him if he gave them to the defense in discovery. Which, keep in mind, from our perspective, we know all the problems with Urich. We all have our feelings about Urich. We don't trust Urich. But I actually agree with him that that's negligent. Like, how do you go make it all the way to filing the motion and going before a judge without ever even interviewing the person that wrote the note? Someone who that came from the office that you're heading up right now. And I think that was a mistake. And I can, and this may make some people mad about this, and I don't intend to, but I'm trying to be as fair and unbiased as possible. I can see the argument there. Like, you only got one side of the story and made no attempt to get the other side of it. Bates says that he did interview Urich, and he says that Urich provides ample information that the notes do not point to any alternate suspects. According to Urich, the make her disappear note was actually about Adnan and not about an alternate suspect. Now, on that note, I can see when he's looking at that record why he made that determination. But there's more context there, and that's what bothers me, because Urich knows, Bates knows this context. One is the fact that the person who that note was about, the person that supposedly called in the tip that caused Urich to write the note, has not only said but has written, come forward and written an affidavit saying they were not talking about Adnan. Problem is that affidavit wasn't part of this record that he's reviewing. That wasn't something that Mosby did before filing this motion. And when I get to the end of this, you'll see why I think this stuff matters, or I'm hoping that it matters as a non-lawyer just looking at this. And we also know that Urich has a history of dishonesty. You know, we have, you know, all the stuff with Asia McClain, where he testified under oath that Asia told him that the Adnan's family pressured her, and she only signed the affidavit because they pressured her to do so. And she came forward and said, that's absolutely not true. That didn't happen. She had her notes from the phone conversation that in no way was she pressured to do this, and that Yurik was lying. Now, unfortunately, that's never been, you know, it becomes a he said, she said, but you can see where the motivation comes from for Yurik to be lying. There's no motivation for Asia to be lying. And on that note, as far as Asia is concerned, she's been posting on some social media, and she was actually commenting during Rabia's live. And she said she's met with Ivan Bates. And she said in the live chat that he told her then in a dinner conversation that he knows that Yurik has done a lot of dishonest things. And she also said that he had told her that he believed that Adnan was innocent. So that's something to have in the back of your mind. Because the big thing that people are talking about now is there's been this pivot. He's done public interviews where he said he thought Adnan was innocent, that he supported overturning the conviction. On the other side of it, to be trying fair and balanced about it, though, too, he was saying that when he wasn't in the office and had access to everything that was there. And also, again, this motion, I keep calling it a motion, this him dropping this motion to vacate and the reason he states for it actually don't contradict what he said before. Nowhere in there that I read is he saying he believes that Adnan is guilty. What he's saying is that he believes there was integrity in the conviction, and he believes that the way this motion was filed was not proper. There was stuff in here that was dishonest. There was stuff that was left out. He doesn't like the process. It's not the right way to have done this, is what he's saying here. And on that note, as he goes on, he said one of the things that he did is pulled all electronic communications between the Syed review team members, everybody that was working on Mosby and everybody that's working on the case. And in doing so, he found a memo regarding one of the notes related to Bilal. And he says that the memo said, quote, "I am not currently of the impression that Bilal made any threats in front of the witness," end quote. What he's saying is that after they reviewed this, that somebody on the team had told Mosby, I'm not of the impression that Bilal made any threats in front of anybody. Meaning, and what he's getting at is that there was information that Mosby had that indicated that maybe she wasn't right about what that note meant and then went forward anyway. But again, I'll remind you, what's outside of that record is the affidavit from the person that was about, from that witness. Bates says in his motion that the alternate suspect, the two of them, Bilal and Alonzo Sellers, were known to the defense before trial, and that Gutierrez pursued a defense theory that Sellers was the killer in front of the jury. And so that's that other prong of a Brady violation, right? Is number one, you have to prove that it was withheld. And then two, you have to prove that it would have made a difference in the trial, would have changed the outcome of the trial. What he's saying is, even without that note, she already presented to the jury that Bilal was an alternate suspect. I disagree with that point. I think that's a weak argument that would have been destroyed in a hearing, because if you're already of the strategy that you're putting out in front of the jury that you think Bilal or Sellers was the alternate suspect, and then you could have added to that, here's a tip that the police got about Sellers, then I think that, you know, I would like to think it would at least have shifted the needle a little bit. Now, moving on, Bates says that he interviewed Yurik and Kathleen Murphy, who was the other prosecutor on the case. And though the interviews, what's it say here? And through those interviews, so these are the interviews that Mosby failed to do. She didn't make any effort to contact them to ask them about it. So Bates did. And he says that through the interviews, you determined that the notes were, and it says, I quote, "probably turned over to the defense through discovery and a series of open file reviews before trial." So probably sucks, right? So he's saying that, you know, there's a good chance after talking to him, they're like, yeah, they probably were turned over, not only through discovery, but also they had these open file reviews where basically they lay out their whole file and the defense can come in and go through them. And it's something that prosecutors will do sometimes to make sure that there's no Brady violations in there. Like, here you go, you got everything. But probably sucks. But you have to remember that in this case, the burden is on what's normally the defense. In this case, it was Marilyn Mosby to prove. You have to prove that the documents were never turned over to the defense. And what he's saying is he talked to them and they said they probably were. So in his opinion, it was left as unproven. Bates says that the defense for this relied entirely on an interview with Adnan's current attorney to determine that the notes were not in the file. And then he goes on to cite some concerns about the chain of custody of the defense file, and he notes that it has changed hands several times, from the Attorney Grievance Commission to Rabia to Susan to Adnan's attorney Justin Brown and his current attorney Erica Souter. So he said, and I'll quote it here, he states, quote, 25 years after the trial, it's impossible to rely on any representations of the status of the trial from 2000. This office can only presume that the note could have been in the file at one point and then lost or misplaced along the way. So, you know, he's saying that, you know, the file got passed around all over the place, and then 25 years later, whoever has it last says, hey, this thing's not in here. He says, you know, the defense or Mosby didn't present evidence to prove that the document was never in the file. And he points out that even in her motion to vacate, Mosby even hedged about this, where she said that it's possible that Gutierrez had the notes, which she says would just shift the claim from ineffective assistance from Brady to ineffective assistance of counsel. So, you know, that's hard to argue too, where Mosby in her filing said that there is a possibility that it wasn't in there. So by her own admission, again, according to what he's putting here, she's saying that there's a chance that it wasn't Brady. And she again, that was a hedge, because she said, but if Gutierrez did have it, then it was ineffective. She should have used it. But they didn't file an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, which again, and I keep stressing, I say this all the time, but I just want to make sure, I'm not a lawyer, so some lawyer may come and tell me I'm completely wrong about this. But that, again, is a reason why he doesn't like this motion, because the motion didn't claim ineffective assistance of counsel. It just claimed that it was Brady, while noting that it might have been there, and if it was, then it would be ineffective. And Bates notes that this is indicative of the speculative nature of the alleged Brady violation. Now, for me, that's the whole thing on the Brady violations. On face value, and I'm saying on face value because I don't know if all of this is true, if all of this is accurate, but on face value, if this is the case, I can see why it would say this is not a proper reason to vacate the conviction. This would not hold up if a defense attorney made this argument and there was a state's attorney that was arguing against it. It would not overturn the conviction, is the way I'm reading it, where he's coming from with this. You know, she, you know, with the notes, she never talked to the people that wrote the notes. There's not the affidavit in there from the person who the note was about. All the proofs that you would need weren't there. And it was just, and Mosby herself said that they could have been in the file. So it within her own motion, there's speculation there as to that. Moving on, the next one was the cell phone evidence. There's not a whole lot there. Mosby had cited Brady for not turning over the handwritten notes, is the way he put it. There was also, you know, Brady for the, that was argued actually in the PCR hearing in 2016. So that's a different issue where they had argued, you know, as far as the facts cover sheet that was left out. But Mosby cited that Urich didn't turn over the handwritten notes about the cell phone evidence, and there was ineffective assistance of counsel for Gutierrez not cross examining the cell phone expert. Bates' retort to that is that he claims that in trial, the expert didn't rely on the cell records in question, but rather testified to an independent drive test where he went to like 13 locations and said which towers would connect to what. I don't know about that argument. That seems weak to me as far as from his perspective, you know, that, you know, these were part of the records. There were clearly a lot of science about cell phone evidence that was argued at trial. But he's saying that, you know, not having these handwritten notes about these reports is irrelevant if they had him at trial, because the expert didn't rely on that stuff at trial. So it wasn't anything that could be properly cross-examined, because there was never a single question asked about that by the state about those documents, and therefore it wouldn't have opened the door for cross-examination, is the best I can interpret what he's saying there. And then we move on. The third one is the DNA evidence. Bates says that the DNA evidence to exonerate Adnan was problematic for three reasons, and he lays them out. First reason he lays out is that the DNA was found on shoes in the back seat of Hay's car, and Bates says it was never proven that they belonged to Hay. In my opinion, that's a chicken shit argument. That's ridiculous. For starters, their girl's shoes in the back of a girl's car that was murdered, who was found dead without her shoes on. So, like, we're making this argument that we didn't prove they belonged to Hay, but also, even beyond that, like, I don't think, like, that's a, I think that's a ridiculous argument to begin with. But beyond that, they could prove it, right? They know her shoe size. They could have checked the shoe size. They could have asked her parent or her parents or brother, anybody, you know, if those were her shoes. There's a lot of ways they could do it. They could test for DNA inside the shoes, which kind of leads on to where he goes next. And the second problematic thing about the DNA was that there was four DNA profiles found on the shoes. And while Adnan's DNA was not included, neither was Hay's. There are her shoes, which he says further raises the question of whether or not the shoes belong to Hay or if she was wearing them on the day she was killed. That is a little better argument, I guess. But again, like, whose shoes are we saying they are? Like, this, again, this is pretty far out there. I don't know that finding DNA on shoes is enough to fully exonerate Adnan, but this argument is very weak, in my opinion. You know, they're really leaning on these shoes didn't belong to Hay, which that wasn't proven when there were certainly ways they could prove it. And his third point is that the DNA was found on the bottom of the shoes, which he says could have been transferred from anyone, which is true. You can pick up DNA transfer from anybody on the bottom of the shoes. But what I don't know is, was that the only place that was swapped? Did they swap, you know, because they got the four profiles on the bottom of the shoe and Hay's wasn't there, which you probably wouldn't expect them to be there or her DNA to be there, or it's not unreasonable that they wouldn't be. But did they swab the inside of the shoe to see if her, because her DNA absolutely should be in there. And so, and that's not mentioned in the executive summary, whether that was done or not. Now, if they had swabbed the inside of the shoes and found out there was no DNA in there or there was not Hay's DNA in there, then I could see his argument. My assumption is they didn't, because they know that the inside of the shoe is going to be full of her DNA. So they were probably swabbing only the outside of the shoe, looking for someone else's, which again, so that the DNA evidence argument, while I don't know how strong that evidence is to just to overturn the conviction, I think certainly compiled with everything else we know about the case, it is his argument here. I don't buy it. But he also reveals, and this is, you know, all this stuff should be on the record. And this is, he says that in their look at the electronic communications, he discovered that there was an email sent from a team member to Mosby, on the day before she dropped the charges, that states the DNA from the bottom of the shoes was, quote, not conclusive evidence of innocence. So that was internal communications within the team. So she, you know, the way he's painting this is Mosby gets a, you know, they do the DNA testing. The people on her team that do the testing, whoever it is, emails her and says, this is not conclusive evidence of innocence by any means. And she goes ahead the next day and declares Adnan innocent and drops the charges afterwards. So at least the way he's painting it, he makes it, this seems like very much an attack on Mosby other than anything else. I think Colin Miller hit the nail on the head pretty well here when he said that Adnan seems like he's kind of collateral damage here, that Bates is going after Mosby and Adnan is kind of paying the price for it. I'll also say that if everything in the document that he says is true, that I do agree with him in the part that, you know, this was some shady shit the way Mosby did it. And that's not Adnan's fault. And that's not indicative of his innocence or guilt. But if she was, you know, personally looking at this stuff and again, taking it on face value, and if I'm just assuming everything he's saying in here is true, then where's the political motivation really? Where everybody's putting it on Bates right now, which was probably true too. But was there a political motivation on Mosby's part? With the election coming up and all the trouble she was already in, was there political motivation on her part to, I'm going to exonerate this person that millions of people around the world all love and believe is innocent, and I'm going to be the hero of this story? Was that a hope to save her political career? I don't know, but I could see that happening. And this is, and for those of you who are watching live, everything's out of order right now, but for you just listening on Sunday, you will have heard in the follow-up on Friday, Janet say, and she was exactly right, that this is exactly why everything needs to be done right. Two things can, you know, a number of things can go wrong if you're not doing things right and you're not following the rules. And that is that an innocent person gets locked up because of it, And the guilty people go free because of it. You know, it's never good. All of these things are easy to argue if everything is done properly. And it does not appear. And again, I want to preface this by saying everything in here could be bullshit. I don't know. I'm only reading what's in front of me. But it seems like from what everything's here that Mosby rushed the job. She didn't do her due diligence. And part of that, you can see why, right? She had there was nobody to oppose her. She was the state asking to vacate a conviction. She wasn't writing a motion in a way that she could defend it because there was nobody to defend it against. All she had to do was present enough of an argument to a judge to get him to agree with her. And in most cases, when you have the prosecution and defense both coming together saying we don't think there's any integrity in this conviction, in most cases the judge is going to agree. They're not going to go against the prosecutor.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So, moving on, let me quote here. Bates says, regarding the DNA, quote, "Unlike Ms. Mosby, we cannot vacate this conviction based on the lack of Mr. Syed's DNA on the bottom of a pair of shoes found in the back seat of Miss Lee's car." I think that's oversimplifying it, but I think he makes his point pretty well that, you know, he's minimizing and saying like this, we find some DNA on a pair of shoes in the back of the car on the bottom of the shoe, and we're saying that proves he's innocent. I think there's a lot of other reasons, a lot of other ways to prove he's innocent. You guys have heard me do my how to prove Adnan's innocent in 30 days or less. Just based on a map and cell tower evidence alone, you can prove that it's impossible. It's impossible for Adnan to have been guilty. But I agree that just finding this DNA on the shoes doesn't prove it. So I can see the point there. I don't know that the part of the problem with this for me that frustrates me is I don't know that the point needed to be made. You know, like this right or wrong, like did this need to happen or could we just have continued forward with the process? But at the same time, and the reason I'm trying to be as fair about this as possible is because ultimately what we're about is truth and justice. And the thing we've been fighting for all these years is for the players within the system to play by the rules and do things right. And even if it's an outcome that we don't like, I still can't sit back and endorse something not being done right. And so if these things are all true, then I can see the point. There is light at the end of the tunnel here, though, at the end. I'm getting to it. I want to read the final note, though, that was from that executive summary. It's really disappointing. Quote, "As a final note, Ms. Mosby represented to the court that this was an open and ongoing investigation. This office's review of this matter has not revealed that there was ever an open investigation into any purported alternative suspects in the murder of Haman Lee. Baltimore PD similarly reported that it did not have an active investigation, and this office will not ask for one to be opened," end quote. That's disappointing for me for two reasons. Obviously, I'm disappointed by the fact that Bates is saying that he's not going to ask for an investigation, but more so, the fact that Mosby claimed to all of us that there was this active investigation going on, that she that her team was doing all this work to find justice for Haymon Lee, to find her killer. And if this is true, she was lying to everybody that there wasn't an active investigation, which leads me back to what I was saying earlier, is I think that there's a good chance this was politically motivated. I think that she rushed to exonerate Adnan to save her political career and didn't actually care, give a shit at all about Haymon Lee and her family. And I say that because if she did, then there would have been an active investigation. She would have actually been doing this instead of just providing lip service to everyone. Now, again, Ivan Bates could be a big old liar and all this could not be true. I'm just basing it off of what he said. But if that's true, that is so disappointing that's where we're at. And to put us through this whole roller coaster, to put Adnan and the Lee family and everybody through this while cutting corners and not doing things right is frustrating. Now I'll get to why, you know, I was kind of laying things out the way that I did. I don't think that this is over. Putting myself in the position of if I were a defense attorney working for Adnan right now, to me, reading through the lines of this order, again, the order doesn't say Adnan is guilty. The order says the way that Marilyn Mosby went about this to try to overturn this conviction was improper. She was dishonest. She didn't do her due diligence. And the evidence presented here is not enough as a state's attorney to say, I'm comfortable overturning the conviction based on this. And the way I would read that as a defense attorney is to say, okay. And he actually, at one point he says, like, what he's doing here is returning this back to the normalcy of an adversarial situation within the court system, right? Where you have a defense and a prosecutor both arguing both sides in front of a judge. Him saying that, and the way this is laid out and what we know about the case, I think that if I was a defense attorney, what I would be doing is saying, okay, he just gave us the playbook. He just told us everything we need to know that was done wrong here so that we can do it right and then file the motion in a normal way where the defense comes in and files a motion to vacate based on these things. So imagine a new motion to vacate. Let's go back to the Brady violations, right? With the handwritten notes. And you actually do provide all the evidence. We do your due diligence. Interview Kevin Urich, interview Kathleen Murphy about them. Also include the affidavit from the person who said they called. Include, if you can, again, not a lawyer, I don't know if you can, but include the evidence that's been presented in other situations where Kevin Urich has been found to be or has been alleged to be being dishonest within this case with the DNA. You know, maybe try to push for more DNA testing. Find out, was there any more DNA done? Find out what size the shoes were. Find out if you can, because I think a lot of people's knee-jerk reactions are that they're hearing, well, you can't overturn the conviction on the DNA because we don't know that they're Hayes shoes. So screw you. What I hear when I read it is the reason I can't do this is because we can't prove they're Hayes shoes. So maybe if you filed a motion where you did the work and did prove they were Hayes shoes, or at least present evidence that they were, then you might have something to work with, if that makes sense. So, and I don't know that this is Ivan Bates, you know, hoping that happens, but I do think that all things considered to be true in this, that it was a fair decision. I don't like it. You don't like it. Most of the world doesn't like it. But I think that it was a fair decision. Because if all that's true, then that's not the kind of motion you would expect to find that would actually overturn a conviction. So I think I would be taking that information as a playbook and say, okay, here's where the prosecutor found the holes. And he's now explained to everyone where all these holes are at. Because keep in mind, too, as far as I know, he didn't have to do that. It's his office. It's his motion. He literally, as far as I know, someone correct me if I'm wrong, could have just said, I'm withdrawing the motion to vacate, and that's it, and not said a fucking word about it. But he didn't. He laid out everything that he saw wrong with that motion. So these are all things that can now be corrected in a new motion by the defense. So this is not over. This doesn't have to be over. The defense now can go back to what would be a normal operating procedure, file their motion to vacate based on what is now new evidence. The DNA on the shoes is new evidence. It wasn't included in the PCR hearing. The handwritten notes, that is new evidence. So these are opportunities to open the door again to file another motion to vacate from the defense side. So I don't think that it's all gloom and doom here. I want to believe, and part of it is just, God damn it, I just want to believe that Ivan Bates is what I think everyone thought he was. You know, I mean, Robbie had talked about it today. Like, she's met with him, she's talked to him, she helped campaign for him and believes that he's a good guy and he's an honest guy and he's a law and order guy. And I think that the take on this that I was wrong about him and he's an asshole, I don't know, but I want to believe that that's not the case. I want to believe that because he's a good guy, even though he believes Adnan is innocent, that he's insisting that this process be done correctly. That's what I am choosing to believe. I'm not saying that that is the case, because it really is, when you break it down, it's hard to argue with the arguments that he made there. So where does that leave us? It leaves us in kind of a scary spot. I'm less concerned about that and more concerned about the juvenile resentencing hearing that we just had yesterday. Like I said on the outset of this thing, I think that's where we need to be focusing any, you know, whatever you do, whether it's prayers or good thoughts or good vibes or whatever it is, that's where we need it, because ultimately Adnan can't go back to prison. Like, the idea of him being out for 2 years and finally getting his life together and living a good life and just keeping to himself and just trying to spend time with his wife and his family, him having to then go back into prison for the rest of his life is something that I just can't stomach right now. So I'm really, really hoping that that judge rules to stop that from happening. Then if that happens, then we can breathe. And then it's up to Adnan. He, from what I understand, he, through his testimony or his statement that he made at the hearing yesterday, he cried through a lot of it. It has been really emotionally taxing on him. He's really exhausted by this, I think, as you would expect. And I wouldn't be surprised if the judge rules to resentence him to time served and this is over for him, if that's it, if he's just done, if he just says fine. You know, he has this conviction on his record. He has millions of people around the world that believe he's innocent. Regardless of that, he has a great job. He's got a great family. It is obviously negatively affecting his life, but he's able to function. I think of like Damien Echols in the same way, where Damien, who, you know, desperately wants to clear his name, but at the same time, Damien made a decision years ago to push forward and live his life, to not live his life in those prison walls anymore, now that he's outside of them. So I wouldn't be surprised, but also it could be they could resentence him. He could stay home and then his defense could go ahead and file this motion to try to get this conviction overturned. The other thing that could happen is the judge could send him back to prison, which is just, would be just absolutely devastating. But then the fight has to continue. It has to continue. Adnan is innocent. He is 100% innocent. This is the reason why I did the reply brief series last year, after that other podcast put out a bunch of lies to try to sway public opinion, and my opinion, just simply for ad dollars, which is disgusting. But my big concern then was a bigger picture. It wasn't just that this is my case and it upsets me, or that it, you know, an emotional response to someone attacking my work or Robbie or Susan or Colin's work or anything like that. It was the big picture I saw back then was, we're in the middle of litigating this case and public pressure is going to be important. And regardless of the way we want to think about it, facts are facts. The state's attorney's office position is a political position, and politics are always going to be part of it. And when you have 99% of the people that file the case and are vocal about it screaming to let Adnan out, I think that it's a lot easier for the prosecutor to be open to doing that. When all of a sudden you start to get this groundswell of people fighting back the other way, that number grew after that podcast came out. That's what I was concerned about. It's possible we wouldn't be in this position that we're in right now had that not been done. And that's the reason that I did it. So I've already been going for almost an hour, but I'll try to, if you guys have any questions in the chat, I'll try to answer a couple of questions from the chat, and then I'm going to cut this thing off. I had no idea how long this was going to take to get through it. Hope that made sense to you guys. Hope nobody's mad at me, but this is the way I feel about it. Sunny in the chat asked if it's been a long time, but didn't I meet with Urich? No, I did not. That was David Dobbs in Ed 8's case, different prosecutor. Oh, Kathy asked if I'm going to do a reply brief on the West Memphis 3. They're doing it now. I didn't know they were doing it now. I'm not. I don't want to feed any more oxygen into it. And as I've been saying, after spending the years investigating the West Memphis 3 case, what I determined was nothing anyone is going to say is going to solve this case. It's going to take science. And that's what's happening right now. That's what was supposed to go out the door on Tuesday. And hopefully very soon will be going out the door. We're going to do DNA testing, and the results will speak for themselves. I have no idea what they're saying about it or that other podcast or what they're going to conclude. I don't give a shit. Who gives a fuck? Because at the end of the day, fingers crossed, very soon we're going to have DNA results that are going to prove without question what happened here. Jenna asked, do we think that Adnan's team could sue the state because it isn't legal for them to allow the victim's family to appeal the vacatur of his conviction? I don't think so. Again, that's a lawyer question. I don't know, but because they did. So the Hayes brother and his attorney spoke at the hearing for the resentencing yesterday. And of course they played a role to send this back down, and it was based on victims' rights, but I don't think that comes down to suing the state. I mean, it was decided by judges, it was a 4-3 margin that decided to send it back based on that. They cited case law the way they see it. That's their job, is to interpret the law. I don't see how anybody could be sued for that. Lucy's asking what evidence is currently being tested. If you're talking about Adnan's case, nothing's being tested right now. If you're talking about the West Memphis 3 case, nothing is being tested right now. That's what we're trying to get. All parties involved are on board with the testing. It just literally, we're at a point where the document has to go before a judge to sign off on it, and it's going out the door. And then I can share all those details with you about what's being tested. All right, and I think a good one to end on, Grayson, who you guys have heard on the show before when we were doing the reply brief, and is from Baltimore, says, I'm just ready for it to be over, Bob. Grayson, buddy, I agree with you 100%. Something needs to happen here. So I'll just leave you with this. Pray or hope to whoever you pray or hope to that the judge rules to resentence Adnan to time served, and then at least we can all take a breath of fresh air and relax, knowing that Adnan at least is home and the threat of going back to prison is finally behind him. And with that, guys, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. We can talk a lot more about it on the follow-up. We'll be recording live on Tuesday night. If you guys want to join in the YouTube chat, it'll be Tuesday night at 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. Eastern time if you want to join the chat. And we'll have Eric will get a post up this week for anybody to ask any questions. So we'll talk about it a lot more. Thanks, everybody, for joining me that's here in the live chat. I know I didn't get to the chat a whole lot because I was yapping about everything, but I hope that clarified things for everybody and those of you that are listening on Sunday. Hopefully, this doesn't sound like a gobbled up mess when it gets put together, because I haven't done anything like this in a really long time. With that being said, we're going to let you guys go, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Love you guys. Bye. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.